Business Hour with Oli Bocheng on OFM, the sound of your life.
You know, at the most basic level, conceptually, what is cryptocurrency?
Yes, so there are many different cryptocurrencies out there, I think more than 4,000, but the first cryptocurrency to come into existence is Bitcoin. And many people believe Bitcoin to be complicated just because it's something new and it's digital and it's not tangible. But Bitcoin really at its core is digital peer-to-peer money. Now, what is peer-to-peer money? A peer-to-peer money means there's no intermediary standing between the two people transacting. So if you think of cash, if you do a cash transaction, cash is you know, it's in person, it's just you and the counterparty and you exchange cash. So Bitcoin is in that sense very similar to cash. The only difference is it's digital. So it's a digital transaction that happens between two people without a bank or a payments company or any person standing in between having to receive the instruction, process the payment so that the recipient can receive its funds. So similar to cash, just digital. And the result of that is it results in faster and cheaper payments because there is no middleman. And that's why in some countries people use Bitcoin for cross-border payments because you don't have to work through a bank or through an intermediary to process that payment. And you know, sometimes it can take up to seven days to process that transaction. But in addition to Bitcoin acting as digital cash or digital payments, it also acts as a store of value. Now, in some ways similar to gold, Bitcoin has a limited supply. So only 21 million Bitcoin can ever be in circulation. And because of that scarcity, Bitcoin has a value. So firstly, it acts as a payment system. Secondly, people buy it as an investment or as a store of value because it's scarce. Unlike banknotes, which you know, banks, central banks can just print additional notes and put it into the economy. And then thirdly, it's like the internet. It's global. So it's not linked or confined to any single country. Similar to the internet, it's on 24/7. There's no open and closing hours. So if you combine these three aspects, Bitcoin for payments, Bitcoin as an investment, and Bitcoin like the internet, global, and you mix them up, then you get something very close to a Bitcoin.
Marius, I mean, you've mentioned that it's finite. Why is that? And are you able to indicate in terms of value-wise how much has already been mined?
Yes, so as you mentioned, Bitcoin is finite, so only 21 million Bitcoin can ever be in circulation. However, you can buy a fraction of a Bitcoin. You don't have to buy one Bitcoin that's currently worth more than 700,000 Rand. You can buy a fraction of a Bitcoin. And so the reason why Bitcoin was created as a scarce digital asset is to ensure that it's on a deflationary supply curve. And that's unlike fiat currencies like the dollar and the euro and other currencies where that's on an inflationary supply curve. So central banks can decide to print additional units of currency and that will flow into the economy. And over time, the medium to long-term impact of that is inflation. So Bitcoin was created as a scarce digital asset, and that is so that there can be some adoption. So if Bitcoin was just created as another means of payment, you know, people would probably not have looked at it initially and started using it for payments, but it was created as a scarce digital asset. So the impact of that is as the utility increases, as more people become familiar with it and more people want to willingly use it for payments, that should drive up the value of Bitcoin. So maybe if I can use an example, let's say you own Visa shares, so Visa the payments company. Let's say you own a share in Visa, and they enable you to use that share to pay for goods. The more people that use Visa shares to pay for goods, the more valuable Visa as a company will become, and that should then reflect in Visa share price. So it's a very similar analogy. The more people that use Bitcoin for payments, the more in demand it will become, and in effect, the price should appreciate over time.
And in terms of the 21 million in circulation, where are we currently?
So currently just under 19 million Bitcoin is in circulation, and I think the remaining 2 million Bitcoin will take more than 120 years or so to be mined and to be put into circulation.
The Business Hour with Oli Bocheng on OFM, the sound of your life.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions around cryptocurrencies in general and Bitcoins in particular? I know a lot of people like to use the big word volatility, market volatility as well. What are your thoughts on that?
I think just firstly, Bitcoin isn't a get-rich-quick scheme. Many people out there pretend to act as traders and pretend to act, you know, to say that they can double or triple your money in a very short space of time. The only way to get started or interested in crypto is to do it yourself. So no person can predict the price of Bitcoin or the price of Beam, even in the next 24 hours. The price is not guaranteed to only go up. The price will come down as well. So as you pointed out, it's volatile. So the price moves, and it's more volatile compared to the price of stocks, for example, or the currencies, etc. So if you decide that you want to get started, you think it's interesting, you want to learn more, don't start by putting in all of your funds. Start by educating yourself. So investment or speculation starts with education, not by committing thousands of rands. Start small and first understand the risks. That's the first misconception, is that you can only make money from it. It's not true. Similar to the price of stocks traded on a stock exchange, the price can also come down. Secondly, there's a misconception, I think, in the public's eye that Bitcoin is only used by criminals and it's only used by scammers. And I think, so yes, we're not going to lie. So some people use it, to commit crimes, but people also still use cash to commit crimes. They also still use their bank accounts and normal bank payments to commit crimes. And they also use platforms like WhatsApp and Telegram and other communication apps to commit crimes. So, but we don't ban those communication systems because there's a net benefit to society. So the same can apply to crypto. Most people, in fact, 99% of people use crypto for legitimate reasons. And the research shows that less than 0.5% of people of transactions over the past year went for illicit purposes. So that's another misconception. It's not only used by criminals. Many businesses, international businesses and fund managers and investment banks also use Bitcoin as part of investment strategies or as part of payments.
You speak on the commercialization of Bitcoin, mentioning, companies, bigger companies' interests, Wall Street giants like JP Morgan, etc. The question I have for you is, how long do you think until governments clamor onto it and the cryptocurrency world is bogged down by regulation?
I think regulation is necessary. I think it's very important that regulators look at the platforms providing these services, so the intermediaries that enable people to buy crypto, to get access to crypto. Many of these companies are scammers and operators as scammers. They don't have the capability really to safeguard customer funds and customer information. So I think regulation is necessary on that front to ensure that the companies that provide these services, similar to banks and asset managers, that they obtain licenses and that they go through proper due diligence before they start to offer services to people. I think the trend globally is that regulation will come to the market sooner rather than later. In certain markets like the US, we see more regulation and we've seen more sophisticated regulation, and that's why we've seen companies like JP Morgan and other big asset managers like Fidelity starting to offer cryptocurrency investment funds and give exposure to their clients because there's regulation. We have not seen that in South Africa or in emerging markets at large because we don't have regulations currently in play in these markets. But what I can say is locally in South Africa, the South African Reserve Bank is working very, very closely together with other local authorities to put regulations in place for the market. So hopefully in the next year or so, we'll see regulations on the SA front as well.
The Business Hour with Oliver Heng on OFM, the sound of your life.